project in oral history and the black experience during the Depression years by Sandy Parker. We're in Reverend Simon's office at the New Bethel Baptist Church where he is the minister. And this interview is taking place at approximately 1:50 in the afternoon of Friday, July 14th, 1989. Reverend Simon, if you would, I'd appreciate if you could tell me where you were born and a little bit about your family and then growing up and where you went to school as a youngster.
Okay, I was born in the state of Alabama, a little town called East Mulga, Alabama, March 23rd, 1925. And according to my parents' recall, they brought six of us children. We came to Pennsylvania. My father used to be a coal miner, and so work was pretty good in the southwestern part of Pennsylvania. A little town called Cardale, Pennsylvania, is in Fayette County, 40 miles southwest of Pittsburgh, 10 miles from Uniontown, which was the county seat. And I grew up in that little town. I went to elementary school and graduated from Redstone Township High School in Republic, Pennsylvania in 1943. And then I came to Youngstown in 1946 with the hope that I would be working at U.S. Steel, make enough money to go to West Virginia State College. I was thinking that I might want to be a French teacher. And so my purpose for coming to Youngstown was to make enough money to go to West Virginia State College. And I got here and 43 years ago, and started working at U.S. Steel, met a young lady, and here I am, 43 years later. I worked for U.S. Steel 9 years, from 46 to 55, and then I resigned and started working with U.S. Post Office as a mail carrier from 1955 to 65, and then I resigned from the Post Office. I was called to the ministry in 1951, and it was 1951 that I enrolled at Youngstown College at that time, which is now Youngstown State University. And I spent two complete years at Youngstown College majoring in philosophy and religion, so I got 65 hours up there. And then I was called to my first church on the east side, Elizabeth Baptist Church, in 1954. I passed there from 1954 to 1959. I resigned and went to school in Cleveland, Central Bible College, where I spent 4 years. Was called to a church in Canton in 1960, and spent 2 years there, and then was called to this congregation where I am now, going on 27 years. I have, my wife and I have been married 40 years. I'm married in 1949. We have four children, ranging from ages 24 up to 37, and I have six grandchildren.
Oh, that's very nice. Reverend Simon, could you tell me a little bit now about, you mentioned the going to school in Pennsylvania. Now, what was the size of the school? What were the size of the classes? If you remember back in those times, did you pray in class and things like that? Could you tell me a little about a bit about a typical day in city and about the first or second grade?
Yeah. Well, as I can recall, I was anxious to get to school my first year, but the first day I was there, I cried, I guess, all during the class period. And a young white fellow befriended me. And when I see him at class reunion, he always reminds me of the time when I came to school that first day and cried all during the class. But I can recall in my elementary school days that we did have scripture reading and prayer in the classroom. That was no problem back there at that particular time. And when I went to high school, I went to Redstone Township High School, which is about a mile and a half from the little town where I was. You had to live, I think, 2 miles before the you could be provided with bus transportation. And back there in that time, the high school I went to, there was about 235 that graduated from that class. There were 7 blacks in that class. I experienced segregation at that time in a little town called Republic, Pennsylvania, where they had a theater, and blacks were not allowed to sit anywhere in the theater. There was a certain section reserved for blacks. Being young, I mean, I questioned a lot of things, and what your parents would say to you, well, that's the way the system is. But we always wondered, you know, why is it that we had to sit in a certain reserved section, even though there were seats vacant in the other section. And if the black section was filled, we still couldn't sit in the white section. We had to wait until some blacks moved out from the black section. And even in high school, I experienced racism. We were allowed to play basketball, football, and belonged to a glee club, but such organizations as High Y, Try High Y, extracurricular activities, we weren't allowed to participate in scholastic things. In fact, our counselor, when I enrolled in high school, most of the blacks, they told us that even though I wanted to enroll in an academic course, take academic course, they steered us into general and commercial courses. And I asked them, why would you want me to take a commercial course, a general course, when I prefer an academic course? They said, well, you might as well face reality. When you come out of school, high school, there's really not that many kind of jobs suited for black people. And so they geared us to commercial and general courses. So I experienced that. The year that I graduated in 43, where our class was having the prom, it was in an outside organization where they were sponsoring the prom at. And because that organization didn't permit blacks, the 7 blacks in that class couldn't attend the prom. So we went to the principal to see what could be done. So he allowed us, the 7 of us, to invite outsiders. And he came to the prom and also the superintendent. So that, during that particular period, I experienced quite a bit of racism.
You said your dad was a coal miner.
Yes, coal miner and minister too.
Okay. Well, you said that there were 6 of you, and you were the youngest?
Was the 5th. Okay. Yeah, but youngest brother was the 6th.
Well, how did your dad and your family make it through the Depression? Because there wasn't an awful lot of coal mining going on.
Right, right. In fact, my father did a lot of farming, truck farming. He would grow sweet potatoes, tomatoes, beans. He would raise hogs. Corn. He would sell corn. He would sell fish on the Fridays, you know. So that's how we made it. I can recall welfare days back there when those of us who were going to school, you know, we were given no government food like milk and sandwiches. I remember that very vividly. And also back there, with 6 in the family, parents couldn't buy, you know, each of us new clothes, so it was like hand-me-downs. And I can recall the days when I had to wear cardboard in my shoes, you know, when the sole would wear out. The father, if he could afford it, he would get leather and he would, and heels, and he'd have a shoe last, and he would fix our shoes. But then there were times when he didn't have the money to buy the leather and the shoe heel, we would wear cardboard in our shoes. Patch pants. And with the kind of modern clothes that kids wear, especially the leisure clothes like khakis, where they buy them already bleached. My mother would put sometimes too much bleach in the water, lie in the water when she was washing clothes, and the clothes automatically bleached. And nobody would like to wear bleached clothes during that time. It's a fad now. Bread was about 5 cents a loaf at that time, I can recall that, back in those days. I don't think we had television in those days. Radio, yes. And I remember the telephone where you used to have to crank, you know, the dial, the Victrola that we used to have.
You said your father truck gardened. Where did he find somebody who had money to buy that, or did he use it for trading, or how did he transport it?
You mean
the produce?
Oh, he had a truck. He would he had a truck that he would transport. He'd go throughout those little small coal mining towns and sell his corn and sweet potatoes and those type of items that he grew in the garden. Yes.
Kind of hard finding people with cash, though, wasn't it?
Well, yes, that's true, too. But some of them couldn't pay, and being that he was a minister, he would let them have it. When they got the money, he said, whenever you have the money, then you can give it. If you don't, do so well and good. There wasn't too much money circulating around during that time, but people that did work, they could live off a little or nothing. It didn't take that much for them to survive. As long as they could eat, they were satisfied.
I'm surprised you said that there were 7 of you in the graduating class.
Yes.
And that out of 235.
But yes.
Good. Well, what surprises me is that there were that many that were going all the way through high school at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Our parents stressed our staying in school. Now, out of the 6 children in our family, only 2 didn't graduate. My second oldest brother didn't graduate, and my older sister didn't graduate at that time, though she did go back to school, get her diploma, and she's in New Jersey, and she's enrolled in college there. I think it's her 3rd year in college. But she didn't graduate at the same time that my other brothers and sisters graduated. She quit school, and then when she went to New Jersey, she went back to night school and got her diploma. But our parents stressed no education, in spite of the fact that we weren't directed into academic studies, academic courses. The basics we learned, back there, you had to learn how to write and read and count. You know, those are some basic things that all of us acquired.
Okay, well, do 2 things for me. Would you describe what your house was like and the things that your family did in the house? And then walk me from your house to your elementary school. Tell me what it looked like and how you got in there. You mentioned that you had a white boy that befriended you. Tell me a little
back
bit
there,
about him.
Even back there, you didn't have, in the neighborhoods, you didn't experience racism or segregation, because we were a small town. We played together, we ate together, we slept together in each other's home, you know. We borrowed from each other flour, sugar, you know. And it was difficult to find out when you went to school, especially high school, and when you went to work, that this is where you faced racism. But as far as the neighborhood is concerned, the neighborhood kids, we played together, slept together, ate together. there was not that type of prejudice that you experienced. I didn't live too far from the elementary school, so I had easy access to it. And the neighborhood we stayed in, where I stayed at, we didn't have no running water, you know, or inside toilets. We had the outside toilet, and we had well water, spring water. And so then the zinc tub where we took a bath on the weekends. So that type of thing. We had no cold stoves where you, there was a, in a mining camp, there was a coal dump where we used to pick coal. We didn't have to buy our coal. Those of us who were old enough, we'd go on the dump and all night, and when they would, the lorry car would come up on the dump and we would dump coal. Those of us who were old enough was able to pick coal and take it home and sometimes sell it to people who needed coal. I remember those kind of days.
What did your house look like? How many rooms did it have?
Oh, we had about, I think we had the last house we lived in, I think it was about 7 rooms. Didn't have all the furnishings that a modern day home has. I remember the icebox days. We didn't have refrigeration at that time. My father used to kill pigs, hogs. He used salt, you know, he would salt them down. It was not refrigeration back there. He didn't go to the slaughterhouse to have his meat cured. He would cure it with salt and what other preservatives he had, he knew about. That was during the winter time. We always had meat to eat because he believed in raising hogs and chickens.
What about in your house? You said it had 7 rooms.
Oh,
yeah. Frame house,
It was a frame house. It was two-story. Then we had a basement, but it wasn't concrete. It was just dirt floor. And when it would rain, it would be wet all the time. Since we left, the people who live in it now, they remodeled the home, and it's, you wouldn't think it was the same home, but we didn't have electricity. I remember the days when we didn't have electricity. We had the coal oil lamps, as we call them, you know. We'd have to, the kids had to clean the chimney, you know, the wick type of thing within the lamp. And so I can recall those times as far as the inside the house is concerned. We had wallpaper, I remember that because my mother used to get on us about helping to paper the walls, and that was the one's hardest chores I've ever had, papering walls. We had chickens, and my mother used to tell us go out and kill some chickens, you know. She used to wring the chicken's neck off, and I couldn't do that. I mean, I had a hard time doing that. Those were the days.
And you lived almost at, like, on a farm there, that it sounds like, very similar.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about city life until I came to Youngstown in 1946. Didn't know anything about city life at all. I went to service in 43, and all alone, cried all the time. I was there for a week. I was in the U.S. Navy 2 years and 3 months. I stayed out in California about 15 months. That's where I spent most of the time.
Yeah. And what'd you do in the Navy?
I was a steward's mate. I took exam for it. At that time, they didn't have certain positions open, so I took a position for third-class cook. Even though I wasn't a cook, I was a steward's mate. And you wouldn't believe it, I don't know how to swim. Navy, he was a Navy guy, can't swim.
at that time, they were rushing us in. In fact, when they gave me my choice, I asked for the Army, but they just put me in the Navy. And during that time, they were rushing the guys in. I remember going to New York, Pier 52, I think, was with the Secretary there. And we stayed on board this U.S. Elizabeth, I think it was, for about 5 weeks, and they shipped us out to Samson, New York. Then from there, I came to Newroden Heights, Connecticut. That was a training center for naval officers, and I was a steward's mate. Then they shipped me out to California, where I spent 15 months. Yes, I was discharged from there.
Okay. You said you were real near the school. Could you describe? You leave the door of your house and turn left or right and walk down the stuff?
Yeah.
What did the school look like?
When I went to go to school, I guess I was about no more than three blocks from. The school was a red brick school. I'd have to pass the church where my father pastored, and I'd have to pass a little post office. I can remember our post office box number, box 51. And then in the next block was the schoolhouse on the left.
You didn't have the postal delivered, then you had to go pick up
No, you had to go pick up your mail in the post office, yeah.
Got to school. Okay. How many rooms were there in that school?
Since it was elementary, we went up to eighth grade. It contained from first grade to eighth grade. We didn't have kindergarten at that time. You had to be 6 years old to go to school. So you were six, you were in first grade, and then when I graduated, I was 18. But the elementary school, two-story building, brick school, had some fine teachers, and that's where I got my basic education at Cardell Elementary School.
Did the teachers there go ahead and help the students out that were having a hard time?
Yeah, it seemed like the teachers took an interest in each student. I know, I can remember, and it's been, I'm 64 now, so that's been over 50-some years. My arithmetic teacher, they call it math, they call it arithmetic, Mrs. Kreinbrook. Remember her, Mrs. Gibbs, Mr. Foster, my principal. I could never forget him because I can recall an incident happened in the class. My homeroom teacher wasn't able to be at school that day, and they couldn't get a substitute, so we had those draw doors. He was teaching in one class, and we were in a study period, and I had a cold that day, and I started coughing like this, you know. And I guess it annoyed him, but he came over, and he was a big guy. He said, "Who's that coughing? Who's that making that noise up here?" So I just, held up my hand, didn't think nothing of it. And he said, "You come on out here." He got another teacher, got a paddle, a leather paddle. He wailed the daylights out of me. And "You go back there and sit down." And he was standing up in front near the desk, and I was looking. I remember looking at him real mean. And he says, "If looks would have killed me, I would have been dead, I guess, a long time ago." But I would never get that experience because he thought I was goofing around when actually I had a cold that day. And he's one of the most unforgettable characters I've ever met. I never used to end up. There was Mr. Foster. I remember that time.
You had arithmetic in your classes. What were some of the other subjects that you had?
Geography, history. I didn't care for geography. I didn't care for history either. I didn't care for English literature at that time. Spelling was one major subject. English grammar, that was easy for me. And arithmetic, those were my favorite subjects. And I wrote pretty well, you know. We had what they call the P.O. Peterson writing. And I can tell when somebody has had that same system, have been under that same system, they write a little different. Anybody
know? You know, it sounds to me like you had a pretty good elementary experience, but when you got into high school, you seemed to have run up against a loggerhead situation.
Yeah. It seemed as though that's where your education ended. You weren't going any further than that. I don't know why, unless I do know too, why I thought I wanted to become a French teacher. My French teacher had a great impression on me. You know, sometimes you sit in a class and certain teachers impress you, and I was pretty good student in French. I think I was a B average, but I thought it appealed to me that, you know, French language. I had a chance to use it, recalling some of the basic things that I had learned in French when I went to 3 French-speaking countries in West Africa. But when I enrolled at Youngstown College, I had to have 2 years of language. Well, the French that I had was, they were going to credit me with that that I had in high school, but I was so far behind the kids who were just coming out of high school that I had to drop it, and I took Greek, modern Greek at that time.
Well, can you tell me anything else that you remember from the Depression? I mean, this is, you mentioned the fact that you didn't have indoor plumbing or any of that, or electricity even at the beginning of the period of time. And then you had all these changes.
Those street lights. There were no street lights during that time. There was closeness within the family structure at that time. There are certain things your parents didn't allow you to do. No, we didn't. There was no, not naturally, but in our home, my father was a minister, my mother allowed us to play cards. And we weren't allowed to dance. Naturally, kids would sneak and dance, you know, someplace. but we weren't allowed to bring anything into that house that didn't belong there. You know, anytime we come in there with something that was unfamiliar, where did you get that, you know? Take it back, you know, because you know it was stolen. Back there, other neighbors could discipline your children, you know. If they told your mother and father something that you did, you got it. You had to have respect for the elderly back during that time. And back there, you know, state law now is that parents, according to law now in the state of Hawaii, understand that you can't hardly discipline your children because accuse you or charge you with cruelty. But back there, you know, my mother used to say, I brought you into the world, I'll take you out if you don't talk back to me. Anything she could pick up, a broom handle, go out to the side and get peach tree limbs, or get the strap, it would have you take off your clothes too. You would never forget that. Sometimes you thought your parents were a little hard on you, but when I reflect now, I'm thankful for the type of upbringing, because we weren't allowed to smoke. You know, there was no drinking in our home, there was no smoking. So I grew up in that type of atmosphere.
You still practice that?
That's why I don't smoke now. Drinking, no problem. Drinking. I tried it, but it just never took with me because I was brought up like that.
Yeah, but, I guess. But the next thing I need to ask is, what brought you to Young? When did you find out about Youngstown? You mentioned you were going to come here and make a buck.
How about Youngstown? Now, in Pennsylvania, there's a coal company called H.C. Frick Coal Company, which was a subsidiary of U.S. Steel. My father had a trustee, it was the treasurer of his church, that worked at H.C. Frick Coal Company, and he got transferred here to Youngstown to work at a steel mill. So when I came out of service, I worked at the coal mine 7 days, and I didn't, before I went to service, and I didn't want to go in the coal mine. So he wrote to my father and told him that there was work here in U.S. Steel, Connecticut Steel. So I came up to Youngstown, it was on a Saturday, September 30th, 1946, and I stayed with that family on what we call the Sharon Line. It's Montgomery Heights now. I stayed with them and started working U.S. Steel and worked there 9 years. 49 is when I got married, and my wife, 40 years now, I met her out there, and we got married in 1949. So I came, but my purpose of coming was not to stay. But that's how I got here, when I found out there was work here through one of the former officers of my father's church.
What'd you do at U.S. Steel?
Oh, I worked in the service department. I worked in the maintenance department. I worked at the scrapyard. I worked as a custodian. The last place I worked as a custodian, cleaning up office buildings. I worked a midnight shift because I had secured a second job. I would work midnight at U.S. Steel. Then when I get off in the morning, I'd work for a scrap iron company. I worked for Columbia Scrap Iron Company in Girard. Then when they had the old diesels, there's a company, I don't know whether it's still in business now, but the office was up on Oak Hill. And at that time, they were doing away with those old, diesels were coming in. Get the name of the, but the cars, the type of equipment that they were using, the regular train, you know, that pulled
steam engines.
That came just so long ago. They were demolishing them, and so those of us who had some experience in burning scrap, we were able to get the job, second job, working for the scrap iron company and demolishing all those steam engines.
Somebody should have put them on the siding. I could have made a mint. Selling them now.
Yeah.
Then you went on to the post office. Why'd you leave U.S. Steel?
Well, when I took exam for the post office, let me see, 1946 to 1955, I was called in ministry in 1951, so I was at U.S. Steel when I felt a call to the ministry. I enrolled at Youngstown College in 1951, completed 2 years, majored in philosophy and religion, so I came out 55, my GI entitlement ran out there, and that's when I was quit the post office and quit the mill and started working for the post office in 1955. My first church, I was called to my first church in 1954 on the east side, and I stayed there 5 years, and started to work post office 55, and resigned in 65.
Mentioned that you went to school up in Cleveland. How did you work that in?
No, yes, I was strange. There was three of us, two buddies of mine. We found out that there was a Bible school in Cleveland that was the closest. So we went three nights a week. I'd get off at 4 and go home, wash up. 5 o'clock, we'd strike out, spend 3 hours in Cleveland in school, and drive back. Each one of us took turns and drive for 4 years. I did that. 4 years.
Modern Greek didn't do you any good. Up there, but
I could use that. Yeah, I wasn't able to use the Greek. Yeah, since there was no accredited seminary nearby, that was the closest. And that's where I got my basic Bible school training, in Cleveland. Three nights a week for 4 years. Yeah. Did some traveling. My first time going out of the country was in 1968. First time flying to, said that to us. Guyana, South America. It used to be British Guiana. Our church belonged to a convention, a foreign mission convention, and one of the ministers from Baltimore said to me at the convention, he said, Simon, he says, when you get ready to take a vacation, I says, I know a lot of the guys go to Bermuda and Hawaii. He says, you go on the mission field. So he said, I'm sure that you appreciate that experience. And I did. First trip overseas was 68 to Guyana, and since that time I've been back about 3-4 at a time. We have a mission project there as a church, built a feeding center over there in Guyana. And then I went to the Holy Land, Israel, in 69, and 78 I went to Ghana, West Africa. Went by myself. One of the missionaries over there was over in the States, and he appealed to our convention to give assistance there. And so he invited me to come over, and I went over and spent 17 days in Ghana, West Africa, and it was a rich experience, you know, going to the motherland. They rolled out the carpet for me like I was a lost son coming back. Then since that time, I'm a part of a national council of churches organization called PIE, Partners of Communism. 25 of us black church leaders were invited to attend an all-African church conference in Togo, West Africa. We spent 8 years at the conference there. That's where it was not my first time meeting Bishop Tutu, but I met him for the second time at this conference, and he was selected a president. Prior to that time, I met him in a conference in Washington, and took a picture with him, and when the conference was over, he and his wife and I took the same cab, rode to the airport, and then about a year later, I found that he was getting the Nobel Peace Prize, so I stuck my chest out. Because I'd met him, and the second time I met him was in Togo 2 years ago, where he was like the president of the All-African Church Conference. So, had a rich experience in traveling.
Well, I certainly appreciate you sharing your recollections with me, and I had an interesting life.
Oh, yeah, as I look back. I've fulfilled most of my dreams. The only place that I think that I've wanted to go that I haven't been is Egypt. I've wanted to go to Egypt. I haven't been to any European countries, and I think I would like to go to Russia for some reasons.
Well, Jane North and wrestler Dr. Smith runs a terrific trip. She's the Russian instructor.
Is there a...
Yep,